This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate Gee. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every other Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. This is Nate G here, along with Dr. Jen Hawk and Dr. Doug Lyle, back together again. How is everybody doing this evening?
Oh, just grand.
Right. It's like a reunion show.
I know. It just feels, you know, my nervous system feels like, oh my God, it's been like 3 weeks since we've done a show with both of you. So it just feels like such a long time.
Longer, I think. I think because Doug, it's been quite at least since you and I were in Cleveland, Nate. So that's more than a month. Yeah.
Yeah. God, seems like
all forever. Grand.
Well, here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
And the apocalypse rages on, and yet here we stand.
Dr. Hawk, has the doomsday clock been updated at all that you know of?
Oh, you know, I haven't checked, but it should be.
Yep.
I have been completely absent of all news. So what do you think? Has there been something going on worth talking about?
Yeah, I think there probably is. Jen, what do you see as most interesting or troubling or whatever for yourself at this point?
I see a couple of things, and they're all intersecting. And of course, this is all nominally about COVID, but I really see it more as about politics, as I see most things. COVID is about politics, but I guess the two things that are most catching my attention and most have me the most agitated is the seemingly lack of efficacy of these vaccines against what we now are calling the Delta variant and potentially other variants. And so we're seeing this case rising everywhere. I think even, you know, the White House and the CDC are starting to acknowledge that this is happening. And this was predicted by a lot of people who were a little bit skeptical or concerned about the vaccines, because you can get into the weeds with this. If you want to, we've talked about this a little bit on Hawk Blocked and elsewhere too, but the general idea is that the vaccines don't prevent infection. They're quote unquote non-sterilizing. So people are capable, even if they're fully vaccinated, of contracting COVID and spreading it to others, less likely to do so than unvaccinated people. So the story goes, but certainly capable of doing so. And that what that does, what this sort of hypothesis has held since the beginning, since I've been paying attention, is that it puts selection pressure on the virus to mutate in ways that evade the vaccine, essentially. And so you are increasing the fitness frontier for this virus to get around the fact that it doesn't like a vaccinated body very much, and it can find other ways to propagate itself and live its little successful virus life. And since viruses are not living things in the same way that we think of most living things, it's a little strange to talk about it in this kind of way, but it's definitely mutating and replicating in exactly the same sort of way we would think of natural selection pressure being put on fruit flies in a lab that are in a hostile environment that have to adapt to it. And so this hypothesis has been around for a long time, and there's a very good case to be made that that's part of what's going on with Delta and potentially with other variants. This goes by various names, most usually the swarm hypothesis. Particularly if COVID came to us as a lab leak from a lab that was attempting to develop a vaccine for SARS, the idea is that COVID itself could be an attenuated version of SARS, i.e. sort of a watered down version of the original virus. And that if that is the case and you expose it to all of the selection pressure out there in the wild with a bunch of vaccinated and unvaccinated people who are intermingling and engaging in high-risk behaviors because they have the false confidence of high vaccination rates. And so they're just spreading it all over the place. You're a bunch of millions and millions of walking petri dishes as this sort of global gain-of-function experiment for this virus is happening. And that potentially, if it did come to us as an attenuated version of SARS, it retains the memory of that high fitness state within it and could sort of de-attenuate back into the most virulent version of itself. This has happened before with other viruses. This is the sort of thing that will happen to chicken farms in China when attempting to eradicate this sort of viral spread. It certainly, there's a history for it. So that has me concerned just on its own merits. And then the intersection of all of that with the current trend politically, with this Manichaean setup where it's us versus them, where it's a divided nation, it's the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. And that if things start going to shit, it's the unvaccinated people's fault. And this is a very tried and true sort of political trope. It's very intuitive. It confers a lot of status and virtue on people who feel like they've done the right thing against the evildoers in their midst. When in fact, we don't know exactly what's going on here. We don't know if the increase in cases is going to go anywhere dangerous or have any sort of relevance for human life, or if it's just going to be sort of this little bump in cases and variants like Delta, which don't look that bad as variants go. Delta's sort of a pussycat of a variant of this thing, or so it seems. The fear is that you do get worse variants, potentially even more virulent than COVID as we know it, and that you have the scapegoating going on of the unvaccinated, which may or may not be accurate, but is certainly politically expedient and leads at best to calls for increased state coercion, increased control, increased vaccination mandates, and at worst leads to great social unrest and, you know, a sort of a civil war type situation. So I'm concerned. I'm looking at all of these things, kind of not knowing where any of them are going, not knowing how worried I should be, but seeing a lot of ingredients in place for a really perilous kind of situation that has a precedent historically in various other contexts. And just through my political science goggles, feeling a lot of angst around that.
Wow. Dr. Hawk, can you talk to us about some previous political situations where this has happened?
No, well, I don't think there are anywhere it's happened around biology in this kind of way, but definitely it is in the sort of pitting citizens against each other, sort of authoritarian playbook. This goes way back, so we can see lots of corrupt states of various stripes that essentially set at warring groups, whether they're ethnic groups or groups that have different political interests. They keep them distracted and a house divided against each other while the corrupt state is actually managing to get away with whatever it wants to get away with. And so that's, there are just countless examples of that. Pretty much every civil war on record is that story. And so when I start to see dominant narratives that are really in the business of othering part of the population there's so much rhetoric. I'm gonna have a bunch of clips on Hawk Block this week that just put it all together so people can hear it out of the mouths of the actual politicians. But one guy was saying, someone from I think the UK was saying that these idiots just need to sit down and do what they're told. They don't deserve a voice anymore. There's this kind of it's not fully. I don't want to use the word dehumanization because I don't think it's reached dehumanization. But that is kind of that is one of the things that you watch out for in a nation that is on the brink of a lot of unrest, is when different groups are regarding each other with this dehumanizing lens. And that is definitely, we are on the path to that, if not already there. And you're seeing national leaders around the globe using this language. Like, it's time that the unvaccinated people start to pay for this. You're hearing that sort of thing from governors in the U.S. new prime minister of Israel was using very similar language. Like these people, they don't deserve anything. They are responsible for the situation that we find ourselves in, and we are not going to pay the price that they have, you know, wrought upon us. And that's all well and good if in fact they are to blame. It's still a political disaster and can lead to really, really horrible crimes against humanity and everything else. But my concern is that in this case, it's not even accurate. That ironically, what could be going on is that the vaccinated are, there was somebody on Twitter who used the very evocative term, spewing mutations like confetti from their jabbed bodies. and that we're all equally guilty of that, vaccinated and unvaccinated, because we're all acting like this is over and we're all mingling together and we're just swapping it back and forth, and the thing is following its fitness frontier as everything on Earth does. So no reason to panic necessarily just this minute. Maybe by the time this show comes out it will. But I am concerned. I have a lot of things that I'm that are keeping me up at night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does what's happening in France keep you up at night at all?
Well, that's one of these great turns toward us and them.
Yes.
You know, this very Manichaean, very you're with us or against us. I mean, this is the language that authoritarian regimes use, and it can be and historically is extremely effective. And you're seeing enormous protests, including in France, around the globe. In my beloved Australia, we saw these enormous protests the other day, this weekend, July 2024, that were met with significant violence from the state. You know, these videos of these police beatdowns in you know, the square where we stayed, Doug. You know, I'm looking at these buildings and I'm recognizing, oh my God, that's our cafe. That's where we had the acai bowls. You know, it's like this sort of very surreal experience to see my favorite city in the world having this experience. And then the fallout from that is the premier of New South Wales is taken to the airwaves and is saying, I'm disgusted. She used that word. I'm disgusted by these people. I'm disgusted by this behavior. This was in response to really draconian lockdowns, you know, really locking about a million citizens essentially in their homes in response to, I believe, two COVID deaths and something like 100 cases. And so understandably generated some protests, and the backlash has just been this disgust and you know, we're going to identify each one of these 3,000 protesters, and they're looking at the footage and they're trying to ID people, and they're encouraging people to snitch if they know that they had a neighbor that went to the protest. You know, there's a special line to report them. And this kind of thing is troubling. It's very, very, very troubling. And if it were happening in the shadow of Ebola, and something, you know, horrific happening in this incredibly virulent contagion that was just indiscriminately destroying lives, that would be one thing. And COVID is, you know, not a very friendly virus. It's a nasty hoe, as someone on Twitter called it, which I thought was sort of a nice little way to characterize it. It's a nasty, nasty virus, and it really wreaks havoc on people. And it is worse than the flu by quite a bit. But there is some trade-off there between how authoritarian do our technologies and our techniques get to try to manage a population that is resistant to vaccination, that is resistant to lockdown measures. And it seems to be globally the answer is just leaning fully into tightening those screws. And, you know, that all of the directions that could go, I mean, our imaginations can run wild with that. So, yeah, concerning.
Yeah, definitely. Holy smokes. I'm just completely and utterly disgusted by the whole thing. I feel extremely fortunate to be insulated, that I'm not working for the VA administration, or that I'm no longer a prison psychologist in California, as now California is requiring state employees to be vaccinated. This is unbelievably stupid. from any scientific point of view right now. Let me explain why there is no rationale for this at this point. In order to argue that the vaccine is worthwhile for an individual, you must be able to run a cost-benefit analysis. It was interesting that Robert Malone, in his interview, I believe, with Brett Weinstein, said that the cost-benefit analysis is not complicated. It's actually pretty simple. It's pretty simple arithmetic. Tell me all of the things that go wrong with the vaccine. Tell me how much it looks like it's helping. And help me self-identify within a cohort, male, female, age, etc., pre-existing conditions where it may be particularly helpful or particularly dangerous and harmful. And there we have it. We got a nice little grid so that a human being can make an intelligent decision. None of this is happening. What people hear are blatant, flat-out lies coming from the government. The government does not, Fauci, all these people do not report the truth. They are absolutely distorting the evidence, okay? And they know they're doing it. It's disgusting beyond belief. Let me lay out for people what kind of data we need, and is probably, it would be a little bit tricky to get it, but we could get it at this point. We could get very good estimates at this point if anybody wanted them, but let me tell you what it is that you would need. You would need, this is just to determine the death issue, okay? Forget the other issue that is more perplexing for many of us would be, what are the risks of, you know, infirmity as a result of a vaccine? So that's a different issue. And but just to figure out where we are right now with respect to this pandemic, let me give you a calm mathematical analysis of the questions that are here. First of all, we are seeing a vast decrease in the amount of deaths all over the place. So, for example, in the UK, the deaths are vastly less than they were before. The United States, they're vastly less than they were before. So, in other words, the numbers are clearly, I think the United States as of today, let me think about this. It looks like we're averaging in the last week about 238 people a day dying. Okay, that is way less than where we were in January. January, we're 2,000 or 3,000 a day. So this is a factor of 10 difference. Now, in the UK right now, supposedly you hear the Delta variant is raging. Yeah, it's raging. 40 people a day are being assigned death from COVID. And incidentally, there's questions that those need to be modified by subtracting by about 20% off the top or 25% off the top because of the essentially inaccuracies and overreporting of COVID deaths. But that's nitpicking about one part of the parameters. I want to talk about the big ones. Why are we having vastly less deaths? That's an important question. If you were so obtuse as to think that the reason we're having less deaths is because of the vaccine, you are too stupid to be in charge of a lemonade stand. There is no reason to infer that that is the reason why we have significantly less deaths now. Okay, the death rate in the United States was crashing, folks, before the vaccinations were even off the ground. Okay, they had already gone through about 80% of what they were going to go through earlier this year with the big wave by the time 2% of the United States had been vaccinated. So the vaccine had absolutely nothing to do with that reduction. These charlatan criminals are actually saying they are using data from the first of the year and saying 99.9% of the people that have died are unvaccinated. That is because they are including all of the people from January 1st, which means almost everybody that's died in the United States, okay, had died of the people this year. Almost everybody, actually, I don't even know what data they're using. They're definitely using, oftentimes when they quote it, they're using data from January 1st. Sometimes they use the entire epidemic. And they throw that data in there too. So you can make these numbers. They are faking, and lying right straight to your face. So first of all, the Delta, there's several reasons why we could be seeing vastly less deaths than we have been seeing. Number one, the Delta variant could be much lighter weight. Okay, it could be a way lighter weight mutation at this point. There's good evidence to suggest that that could be true, but we don't know that that's the reason. All right, but that's one reason. So there's like four reasons that I can think of. Second of all, the vaccine could be helping. I actually think it probably is. Okay, so I think that if you were honest about it, you could actually put the grid up there and show us how valuable that the vaccine might be. Now, from my last look at the data in the UK, of the people that are dying, about half of the people are vaccinated and about half of them aren't vaccinated. Now, God help you, if you say that in the United States, you're likely to wind up getting lynched, for God's sakes, okay? But the truth is, that's what the evidence shows in the UK. Now, that being the case, the truth is, I think way more people in the UK, at least in the older people that are the ones that are dying, by the way, more of them have been vaccinated quite a bit more than have not been vaccinated. So that suggests that the vaccination has potency. That's useful. That would help us understand how valuable the vaccine would be. Okay, but we're not getting that. All we get is steamrolled propaganda from a lying state telling us what the numbers are, rather than a good, cold, calculus, actuarial view of this thing. Thirdly, it could be that the reason why we're having less people die now than we had die in January is that we've paid forward a lot of the weaker people in our society, that we've had 500,000 or 500,000 or 600,000 people die of COVID, and now the truth is that we don't have as many feeble people left. Okay, so that is a possibility. Remember, the vast majority of people over 80 that contracted even the original COVID would survive, well over 90%. Okay, so the notion that this is a death sentence is absurd. Okay, finally, it's possible that the reason why we have less deaths now from the Delta variant is because of the, including the non-vaccinated people, that they have actually been previously infected with the COVID virus, and that's providing essentially a vaccination, natural. So there's actually four reasons that I can see why we're seeing...
I can think of two additional...
Oh, tell us.
One's a big one, seasonality.
Okay, right.
So seasonality is huge. We would expect to see fewer cases in the summertime in the Northern Hemisphere than we would in the wintertime. So that was a lot of the plunge that came just as the vaccines were rolled out, and cases and death counts was related to that. And the second one is you know, maybe more applicable in certain places than others. I certainly noticed it when I was out and about in Seattle yesterday, which is that people are still practicing a lot of distancing and masking behaviors. So people, you know, a lot of indoor spaces, people are still 6 feet apart. Things are really still well ventilated. You know, there's still lots of hand washing, lots of sanitizer going on. And so the sort of, to whatever degree those behaviors make a difference, and I think some of them do, some of them are more questionable, but that could be contributing as well. But the one thing, just to throw a little bit of a wrench in there, is, you know, through the seasonality lens, one of the things that does concern me is if you look at the UK, yes, of course, you see fewer cases than you do. And I'm looking at the UK in particular, because if Delta is something to be concerned about, they're ahead of us. You know, they sort of are, the wave has hit them earlier than it has hit us. And so I just had it in front of me. Let me bring it up again. So they, you know, their deaths now are, they're seeing more deaths now than they were this week last summer. So, you know, this time of year last summer, they were looking at, you know, 35, I'm just world meters here, 35, 50, between 30 and 50 deaths a day. And now they were between 30 and 50 about a week ago, and now we're getting up to the 80s, 80s, 90s. And those curves are climbing more steeply than they climbed during any of the other peaks too. So that's just to throw that at you in your analysis. That's one of the things that kind of has me a bit concerned, is because if we're comparing those apples to apples with seasonality, it does look like cause for some concern.
Hmm. Well, I have a couple of, this is why this should be openly debated. First of all, the UK has a hell of a lot of cases now. So they have exploded. So I'm not...
Yeah, I don't know. As many as they did last winter. Their case count is huge. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that seasonality is involved. I think this thing goes in inexplicable waves. So right now, we're in the middle of the summer. And we are having a huge wave in the UK. All right? So that's... So I think that a year ago, the UK, for whatever reason, didn't have... You know, it went through whatever process it goes through. So I heard some governor thinking that, you know, he knew that in August this or that was going to happen because that's what happened last year. Man, that's the law of small numbers. Like, there's no way I don't expect any shadow of 2021 to be shadowing 2020 at all. What I see is a capriciousness on the part of this virus. And if it were so seasonal, I don't know seasonal how. In other words, it explodes all over, you know, Colombia, where it's not cold at all. So right. I'm not seeing this. So I think that
the outbreak in the U.S. case counts, there's really just one more data point just to throw in here. And yeah. I don't disagree with you. I just there's nobody who's having these debates like at, you know, openly about these things. So I want to just kind of like I'm trying to imagine what people would come back with and actually have that conversation somewhere that exists somewhere that people can listen to it. So the other thing is if you look at the sort of states in the United States, which is this little bit of a federal natural experiment in a lot of different ways, and also a bit of a climate experiment. The states that started to see their cases climb in the summertime last year and had big issues in the summertime are the southern warmer states where it's actually spread through air conditioning, or so the hypothesis goes. So it's this indoor air circulation problem that is a little bit
That's interesting.
You see some differences in, you know, the northern colder states in the U.S. have their peaks in the wintertime. The southern states had their peaks, or at least, you know, with the tiny data set that we have.
Right.
So if you look at the two maps of, you know, this week, last summer, what were the states with the highest case counts, the highest hospitalizations? It's the same 10 states that are having the highest counts now. And so that's that. And it's like Missouri, Texas, Florida, Arizona. That's an interesting little, you know,
that is. Another that's perspective. Jen Hawk's real smart. That's why we have you on there.
real smart. SMRT.
From what I can gather, and this is where it gets also tricky, and that is that we don't. Well, first of all, the total counts of deaths are considerably down from where they ever were. So if you looked at Great Britain. When they were in the major wave early this year, and now they're in a similar major wave in terms of when you look at case counts, the deaths are vastly less. They're down around 10% per infection from where they were before.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and similar case counts. You were looking at 1,000 deaths a day at the peak, and now you got 100. So
that's right.
That's really the difference there.
Huge. Yeah. And you see in the United States the same kind of thing that you're seeing. In other words, what we believe to be true, for example, is that we believe that there's about 3 cases in the U.S. for every case that you've identified. So right now we're identifying about 40,000 cases a day. So just roughly call it 100,000 cases a day are probably being born in the United States. And we are looking at about 250 people a day dying. So that's a 0.25, okay? If you look in Israel, they have about 1,000 cases a day that they identify. They may identify more per capita than we do just because they're so... vigilant, and it's a small, well-organized country. And so they're showing about 1 or 2 deaths a day, i.e. a couple deaths per 1,000. If you are in the UK, you're looking at something that looks very similar. It looks somewhere on the order of 1 in 1,000, 2 in 1,000. None of this, this is all, by the way, substantially different than what we saw 6 months ago or any other time in this thing. So these numbers are on the order of 1/4 to 1/8 they are indicating a dramatic reduction of fatality. We don't know why the lying government won't tell us, is not interested in getting the right information. What I see is a totalitarian-esque steamrolling of pushing this vaccine on everybody without honestly accounting for a very open and honest accounting of all of the problems that are coming up from the vaccine, all the reports, very diligent follow-up, as well as a grid that would honestly show that the vaccines are, for all intents and purposes, worthless for young people. So we already know they're lying, and they are absolutely not to be trusted with anything. The notion that people under 18 would even consider this thing is ludicrous, with virtually no deaths at all. And yet they're going to go after these people just, you know, for some ludicrous reason, like this is how you protect your grandmother. Incredible. So I am just beyond belief disgusted with our government and this entire program that they're up to. And I fear, you know, I look at the moral righteousness that's involved here. It's like, really, you're moral, these young people, for example. I mean, I could go with anybody. This is, it could be. Also, there's in case anybody's interested, a pretty good, I mean, certainly criticizable, as any little slice of science would be. I mean, actually, any science I would present here, I could say, you can look at my report and you could say, well, there's all kinds of holes in it. Well, guess what? We haven't even done the most basic cost-benefit analysis on this vaccine, on any of these vaccines. The most basic cost-benefit analysis that must be done before anything receives approval, nobody is talking about this. And if anybody comes out and starts squawking about that, where is the cost-benefit analysis, you're immediately anti-vaxxer, misinformation, kick you off of social media, you're a bad human. That's incredible. We just want anybody rational wants to not be a member of effectively groupthink and basically say, give me the numbers and don't tell me the lying numbers about 99.2% of the deaths are coming from the non-vax persons. That is bogus. That is a lie. Okay. That is piling data in on top of where it has no business in the analysis. And so that, and then even, you know, even if it were a significant effect, that effect is almost going to be entirely in the elderly, vulnerable people, because that's where all the deaths are occurring anyway. So none of that makes any sense to people under 40, which is half of the population or more. So the notion that we're going to be mandating this thing to steamroll this thing through for what? Some social process where I'm supposed to be defending you because you, even though you get to take the miracle vaccine and I don't want to, that I'm somehow responsible for a threat to you because you might have a breakthrough infection. This all presupposes that the people that are dying have no complicity and no other chance, not to mention a remarkable lack of interest in any treatment options that the CDC yet still doesn't even publish. There is no CDC guidelines about how you're going to do that, except for, I guess, remdesivir, the useless drug that's super expensive. So the complicity, this is not blaming the victim. This is your government not highlighting anything. There is a lot of evidence.
Deliberately misleading you and deliberately. I mean, the thing that gets me politically, what I keep coming back to here, is that this is no surprise. The percentage of Americans who are vaccinated, I believe I have these numbers right. I think we have about 60% fully vaccinated of adults over 18. And I think 69% or 70% of over 18 adults are one dose. And that is, if you look at any Gallup poll from the last 18 months, exactly what it's very consistently hovers around 60%. 60%. You're going to, depending on the political weather, between 55 and 63% of Americans say that they're willing to be vaccinated. So this is no surprise that you have a group of citizens who are very skeptical or resistant, or whatever their reasoning, whatever their logic, whatever they're waiting to see other numbers. They have religious objections. They have political objections. Whatever it is, it's a consistently predictable number. And so whatever they're up to right now, they knew if the whole game hinged on somehow coercing or persuading that 30 or 40% of people, like what was the plan for that? You know, you can't roll out a vaccine program that you know that 40% of people don't want to participate in without some sort of intended plan to manipulate, coerce, encourage, convince, persuade. So what did that look like? And that just makes all of this incredible push, this incredible propaganda push that's going on, really ring hollow to me. And makes me feel like it's about something very much else than convincing people, because they know they're not going to convince these people. They don't have anything new to throw at them. They have the rotten data. They have at best, I do think there is some, you know, it's not that these things don't work at all. It looks like, you know, they don't work as well as hoped. Sure. And so they work to some degree in some people. That's great. Let's celebrate that. But it's even in some places, there's an argument that it's only, you know, instead of 99%, it's 89%. Okay, well, that's great. Let's lead with that and let people make their decisions rather than transparently trying to drag them into some kind of propaganda process where you know that there's, I mean, let's be very generous and say you've got 40% of Americans who are not so sure they want to get vaccinated. You think you can persuade another 20% of those through some sort of cooked data or really great results, or it's summertime and everybody feels like, hey, this is great. Whatever your plan is. What's your plan for that other 20%? If you need 100% coverage of vaccination for this thing to work, you're never going to get it without really forcing people against their will. I mean, you've got Cuomo today talking about how we need to get out there and knock on doors and convince people. And he uses the phrase, put them in cars and drive them and go get them their shot in the arm. That's the plan. And this so, of amazing. Course, the internet is full of, oh, well, better cars than trains, you know, sort of response. But I mean, was this the plan, you morons? Was this, you're actually going to launch this door-to-door campaign where you were for, like, good luck with that 20% of Americans who don't want it and they're not going to do it. Like, I grew up with those people. Those people are feral. Like, you do not want to knock on those doors. They're not going to come willingly with you. Well, so either the plan is that you are going to force them to come with you anyway, or you are setting this whole thing up as you were conditioning half of the good Americans to blame the bad Americans. I can't see it any other way. I don't know why else they would be doing this, because they know they can't persuade those people.
Yeah, I'm so disgusted. I'm disgusted with the mask mandates all over the place. I'm disgusted with the notion, the moral high ground BS, that somehow if you want a vaccine, great, you can go have one. If you feel worried about COVID, go get yourself a vaccine. I don't care. This is not my problem. The fact that I may choose to remain vulnerable to COVID and without the benefit of the vaccine, that's my problem. It's not your problem. For you to say that that's your problem, and that I am causing you a problem, I'm infringing on your rights, is insane, okay? And it gets worse when you actually look at the following evidence that you're not going to hear about. And that is that plant-based doctors around the world, those people that work in hospitals and they're exposed to COVID, those people are vastly less likely to wind up with a serious infection than doctors that eat meat, okay? That evidence exists. That's a big effect size. That was published in British Medical Journal about 6 weeks ago. Okay. So it's like, oh, suddenly we've got a 73% reduced likelihood. That goes from about a 1 in 4 chance of having a nasty infection down to a 1 in 16. Like, that's not important.
So when I look at something like that, what hasn't even begun to be investigated, and so these aren't all a bunch of young people, they're all, you know, all different ages. When you start looking at that, it's like, okay, you're telling me that I am supposed to get vaccinated even though I do not personally feel threatened by COVID, particularly the Delta variant. If anybody would ever crunch the numbers now, as I look at the numbers, Delta variant looks quite significantly less problematic than the previous variant. Now, do I know that that's true? No, but I sure see death counts crashing. And of course, there are four major reasons why those death counts may be less. I don't know what the reason is. Okay, so, but I'm looking at it and thinking, well, whatever the reason is, the death counts are significantly less and per case. Okay, I believe that's true, incidentally, even in non-vaccinated people. Why? Well, maybe it's because a whole bunch of them are personally vaccinated already for a previous exposure. How do I know? Okay, but what I know I don't have is I don't have the equation in order to run a cost-benefit analysis. Okay, so that's what I don't know. So how on earth could I make a rational decision? Anybody right now that thinks they're making a rational decision to get the vaccine or not get the vaccine it may be technically rational, but it's uninformed. Okay, anybody that right now thinks, no, I know what the facts are, you do not know what the facts are. If you cannot give me the parameters on these four major variables, so you cannot explain in any kind of detail that explains what the beta weights are of these four parts of this equation, you don't know what is the cause. Okay, so that means everybody out there that is telling you, oh, talk to your doctor, that's the new thing. Talk to your doctor, talk to somebody that knows. Well, your doctor doesn't know squat. Your doctor wouldn't know whether or not this thing was, how useful it was, with no ability to make this estimation. So there, no doctor here, everybody knows in the United States, you have no idea how many problems this thing is causing. None.
The same doctor that prescribes statins probably.
Of course, the same doctor that prescribes Prozac and everything else, Haldol. Okay? So they're well-meaning. They think they know. They don't know. So what we see here is an amazing self-righteous push where people are not saying, well, actually, what you all ought to do is go on a vegan diet and eat a bunch of natural food. If you're elderly and sick and you might be worried about COVID, well, here's the two things you need to do. Get yourself a vaccine because the CB on that looks like it's probably good for you. And the other thing you need to do is start eating a McDougal Esselstyn Campbell diet. That's what you need to do. Oh, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to say that everybody else, every little school children, 6-month-old people, okay, they need to get the vaccine so that they don't give it to granny when her vaccine fails her. And why does it fail her? And why does she die from some fairly light, pretty lightweight virus? Why? Because she's in lousy condition. So this is the 6-month-old's fault. And now that person winds up with a lifetime of disability as a result of a vaccine that she had no chance to run a cost-benefit analysis on. Wow. That's the moral position that is guiding this country right now, and I'm totally disgusted with it. So that's where I stand. And of course, I look at this, and I listen to Jen, who warned me of this a year ago, by the way.
Just over here, Cassandrine, you know, that's what I do.
A year ago, I was like, no, this is passing. People aren't going to put up with this. People will take their chances, you know what I mean, et cetera, et cetera. And a reasonable notion that, hey, you know, I can see if you are an elderly person, you want to be in a position where everybody around you is careful. You better, you know, pay attention, et cetera, whatever, and take care of your health. All that makes sense. Don't go to a big party, some super spreader event, you know, if you're an elderly person and you are, you know, immunocompromised in some way. Fine. That makes sense to me. Here we are a year later, and we are under constant draconian pressure from the government all the way to the cradle. Inexcusable. So I'm with I'm with Jen. I feel like there's such a bunch of monetary and political power interests here. It's so convoluted and interconnected. I don't even know who's running the ship. I just know that it's dirty. That's what I know. And undoubtedly, there's a lot of well-meaning people on that ship that have their oars in the water pulling for the state because they are uninformed but believe. Okay, that actually summarizes a lot of doctors that I know. They are all pro-vaccine, thinks everybody should get it, swearing up and down that it's safe. They have no idea what the cost-benefit analysis looks like. They couldn't possibly draw it up because the data isn't in evidence. Okay, so they are uninformed believers. That's what they are. Okay, and if you are some, and of course, you know, it's a difficult decision for any individual because it's like, well, what should I do? You know what I mean? You're uninformed on either side of the equation. Well, me personally, never make a big decision when a small decision will do. Okay, you're now looking at a virus that looks like it's got right now somewhere between 2 and 3 times the typical death rate of the flu. That's what it looks like. Okay, and it could be worse than that. I think it was twice as bad as that. I think it was maybe a 0.5, 0.6 kind of animal earlier. It looks like it's a 0.2, 0.3 animal now. Looks a lot less severe. I don't know if that's true, though. I just know that the death counts are way less per infection. So the reasons why that is are not known, but I have a feeling it's little pieces of, number one, the Delta is lighter. Number two, the vaccine is helping some. Number three, some of our weakest people have died. And number four, those previously infected people are somewhat already defended. Okay? But I think a big part of it is the Delta is lighter. That's what I think is likely. And I think that's true because it's my understanding that when these viruses are deeper into the lungs, they are inherently more dangerous, but they're not as easily spread. When they are more active in terms of upper respiratory infections, like the current Delta variant apparently is, they are not as dangerous in terms of they're not as deep as and insidious, and they are likely to be lighter weight, more like flu, cold, etc., things that pass really easily and are good gene replicating vectors, but not as lethal to the host. So do I know that this is true? No. This is just a swirling cauldron of factoids about biology and the data here that's running through my head. Have I had anybody that's been able to synthesize this and give me this equation? No. And I've been listening and I've been looking and all I see is propaganda. So that's what I have to say. Jen, what do you think?
I think there's a lot to that where, you know, the way that you're talking about this reminds me of the story with the blind men and the elephant. You know, there's some of that, too, where you have very specialized bureaucrats who understand their piece of the story. And they're looking in a very limited way at whatever's happening in front of them. And people are coming to conclusions and they're running CBs based on that information. But you really have to step back and look historically, look geopolitically, look like there's so much going on and that I don't think anybody can, it's going to take, you know, a lot of years, a lot of FOIA requests, a lot of declassified documents to ever sort all of this out. But I mean, I'm getting to the point where I am, you know, quite agnostic about the vaccine per se. I don't know how important it is going to be in the long term to the things that we care about, because I think you have three key problems that are emerging and in front of us right now. You have, you know, significant evidence of direct harm from this vaccination rollout that you know, there's definite harm that is happening. We don't know how much. There's no way to track it through meaningful data. As we've said before, all we really have is this VAERS data, which we know is not great, but we don't know how much truth is there or what we're really looking at in terms of direct harms from vaccines by age group or by other specific factors that would be important for people, gender, everything else. So you've got that. You have what looks to be quite short-lived immunity from the vaccine. So you already have the CDC recommending boosters for elderly and vulnerable populations, which, you know, a couple of months ago, it's like, no, that's never going to happen. That's conspiracy talk to suggest as much. But now it's just part of the narrative that, well, of course there are going to be boosters. Of course, this is only going to give you about 6 months of immunity. And that's, you know, particularly if you're in a compromised or vulnerable position. So that's already just part of the story. And because of that, largely because of this sort of limited protection and because it's working at this fairly superficial level of your immune system, the possibility and the likelihood, very high likelihood of viral mutation and immune escape that is essentially a training wheels for producing variants out there in the wild. And the potential havoc that those could wreak on the population. And all of this intersecting with this insane politics of coercion and repression and censorship and everything else that's happening. I've never seen anything like it. I can't believe how quickly this has happened and where we find ourselves and the writing on the wall. And I'm very concerned about the winter. I'm very concerned about what's coming both in the US and around the world. I mean, look, like Australia is completely captured by this. So,
yep.
Yeah.
I have another comment to make. I want to like plant my flag in the ground. I believe, you know, I could be wrong, but I believe the doc in Israel has the problem solved. So I think the doctor in Israel, medical researcher in Israel, actually knows how to treat COVID. And they've got a name for this particular drug that they have known about, and it's a useful mechanism for, I guess, treating cancer in lungs, or I can't remember, breast cancer or something. But the point is that the understanding is that it's the big autoimmune type storm that takes place after the COVID is under control that is the big problem. And the biggest problem is in the lungs. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it turns out that he's got a method. They can go in there instead of treating the whole body. You just use an inhalant for 5 minutes a day for 5 days, and it turns out that this works beautifully. Now, he has said he's going to be light. They're in, I think, stage three clinical trials now in Greece and in India. Okay, so my worry when I heard about this a few months ago was that Pfizer would just hand him a check for $40 million and he'd go away and we'd never hear about this thing. So but I don't think that's going to happen. In other words, they're using these arms worldwide. They're going to do major research. We're going to find out. That starts rolling in August. We're going to know this, the end of this. They're going to know this story by probably, you know, no later than the end of October. They are planning to actually request in probably December or January emergency use authorization for treatment in the United States. Now, I'm going to be fascinated to watch what happens with this. Okay, so what is Big Pharma and our big government going to do when it turns out the problem is solved and any COVID variant can be, because it works similarly and is dangerous on the same systems, turns out it can be knocked out by this treatment? This is going to be really interesting to watch. So stay tuned for what could be one of the most fascinating stories in modern world history. If it turns out, and I don't think this Israeli group is going to back down because there's going to be plenty of funding. The Israeli government is extremely proud of the fact that they may have solved the crisis. Whoever this doc is a longtime researcher. And you know that guy, if he's not human, if he and his group don't understand the incredible prestige and great value they've given to the world and a Nobel Prize in the offing. So I don't see them taking a check, okay? So this is going to be an interesting story. If it turns out it's a dud, we'll find out. But you know what? I'll bet these trials are run honestly. That's why I wouldn't run them in the United States if I were them. I'd run them in India. I'd run them in Greece. I'd run them in different places, and we'll take a sweet look at what this data looks like, because this problem may have been solved by some brilliant people around the world. And if it is, then what are we going to do with the big dragon state that we have now behind us? It'll be an interesting theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dr. Hawk, Dr. Kyle.
Right.
a lot to think about.
Just trying to cheer you up, Nate.
Yeah, oh, no, it's. I've distanced myself from the news just because it stresses me out, and so
yeah.
Oh no, I get it.
There's just much that we can do individually. Good idea. I guess just prepare to be kind of. It's like I'm putting my disagreeable distance on between me and the government.
Yeah, that's good. That's kind of how I. That's look good at it. Thinking.
Particularly in California, not a bad idea.
Oh yeah,
you got.
Well,
it.
I mean, luckily I live in a city right now where pretty much everything's open. And everybody's okay with everything's relaxing a lot more. But I know that that's not all of California. So,
yep. All right, folks.
All right, Dr. Lyle, Dr. Hawk, thank you so much for your insight. We will look forward to all the comments that have come from this, and maybe we'll address it next show. But we'll get to some questions as well. So, thank you guys very, very much.
Fair enough. All right, I'll see y'all soon.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe. Write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.